It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Lenders use credit scores to decide whether to offer you a mortgage or a car loan. Landlords may use this three-digit number to decide who gets to rent their apartments. And new research reveals how mothers with low incomes view credit scores in the system of credit worthiness. Call in with a question, share thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah Halpern-Meekin is a professor in the School of Human Ecology and La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Sarah, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And J. Michael Collins, professor of public affairs and human ecology at UW-Madison. Michael, welcome back as well.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Well, let's start with you. You surveyed 72 low-income mothers with a median age of 27, mostly identifying as either Black or Hispanic. What are you learning from this group of people?
So we were doing in-depth interviews because we wanted to really learn a lot about how moms approached managing their money. And one of the things that just was coming up in some of our early conversations was around credit scores. And so we decided we really needed to go back and ask specifically about that because it was clearly important to moms. So they were often struggling to make ends meet, but still thinking about credit. So we wanted to learn more about that. We asked them specifically about how credit impacted their lives. And we heard stories from moms about how they were really aware of having credit scores, whether those were good or bad. And that was a component of their lives that they thought about as they looked to a brighter future. So wanting to build up credit scores so that they could do those sorts of things you mentioned, rent an apartment more easily, maybe one day buy a house, get better terms, you know, on cell phone service. And they found it really difficult to do because of how that system is set up, but that didn't lead them to give up on making those efforts.
And Michael, a bit more visibility here on these 72 mothers that are part of a long-term study. How might credit scores fit into like larger research questions about equity and what you're learning about mothers with limited financial circumstances?
Yeah, I think broadly, we can just think about the fact that our financial system is designed for people who have more affluence, who have regular income, who have assets, who have wealth. And, you know, for people who don't have regular incomes and don't have any assets or wealth, they can sometimes get kind of left behind. And it doesn't mean that the credit score isn't as important to them. In fact, while the system wasn't designed with them in mind, the ability to borrow, say, to buy a car, is critical. That's what allows you to get to work. And so it's, you know, credit is sort of an essential building block of people's financial capability. And this system, you know, for most of us works pretty well. But when you're sort of on the fringe of the system, when maybe you don't have many accounts, maybe you're not banked, it's a little tougher to navigate this system. Yet we find these low-income moms are persevering. They're pretty resilient and they're finding ways to make it work for them.
Yes, Sarah, you found the people surveyed do not reject the credit scoring system's legitimacy. Did that surprise you?
We thought it was possible that they would say, hey, the deck is stacked against me. Why should I even try? And that was not mostly how they responded. They mostly felt like they faced tough trade-offs, but they really wanted better lives for themselves and their children. And in our society, one of the ways you get those is through having a decent credit score so that you can, you know, help your kids go to college and you can get insurance and all of those sorts of things. So they didn't give up on it even when it felt hard to get ahead.
Kelly wrote in to say that landlords can check someone's credit score before they decide to rent to someone. But if a renter pays the rent, it still does not help improve their credit rating. It's almost like, Kelly says, the credit system was created to keep poor people poor. I want both of you to respond to that. Michael, you first.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about the motivations of the people behind the credit scoring system. It's been, 60, 70 years since these credit bureaus and credit scoring systems were sort of put in place. But it is true that only certain kinds of credit behavior counts, quote unquote, counts in the credit bureau system. So it's payments on credit cards and things like that. Now, it is also true, I mean, if you did not pay your rent on time and that ended up in a court action where there was, some sort of a dispute over the non-payment, that might actually end up in the credit score. But the positive payments of rent don't show up in the credit bureau reports and therefore aren't reflected in the credit score. There are some experiments right now to try to help landlords to do this reporting to the bureau so that those positive payments can be included, but it's still pretty rare. And a lot of landlords are pretty small and don't have a lot of capacity to do this. And unfortunately, the smallest, least capacity landlords tend to be those that rent to the lowest income tenants. So it continues to be an issue. And, for sure, there is a lot of aspects of the credit scoring system which were not well designed for people who are sort of on the fringe of the financial system.
Sarah, what comes up for you in Kelly saying that the credit system is like created to keep poor people poor?
Kelly's, point makes me think about some of the moms talking about the ways that they saw credit scores affecting them. So, as I mentioned, in getting access to affordable cell phone service or internet service, in the kinds of insurance policies they could buy. And it also makes me think about, we have varying laws state to state that say that employers can check credit scores when making hiring decisions. So we can sort of see how credit scores infuse themselves throughout people's lives, not just, when they're making decisions about what to put on a credit card or not.
We're discussing credit scores with two authors of a recent study, Sarah Halpern-Meakin and Michael Collins, professors at UW-Madison. And you can join in. Questions and comments are welcome at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Michael, can you step back and give us more context about credit scores and the different standards? Like, not all lenders have the same view, these scores the same. I mean, can you explain what's behind this number?
Yeah, I mean the genesis of all this is that, starting even back in the 1950s, local creditors, lenders, even retail stores were extending credit to people, and then they would realize certain people weren't paying on time, and then that person would go to another lender or store and take out a line of credit and not pay. And so they formed these community credit bureaus where they would start sharing information and say, "Oh, Bob Smith didn't pay me. You should be aware of Bob Smith." And that sort of evolved into what became our credit reporting system. We now have three major credit bureaus in the US. And back in the late 1980s, the financial institutions that were trying to make decisions based on the credit bureau data said it would be a lot easier instead of having to cull through all this information if we had just a single score. And that was where the Fair Isaacs company, Fair Isaacs Corporation, created the FICO score, which is the score a lot of people have probably heard of. There are other scores out there too. There's Vantage and some others, but generally they're trying to summarize people's credit worthiness on a scale, and that scale runs from roughly 500. It could be as low as 300, but most of what we see in the data is people in about 500 up and through 800, or a little bit higher. So, that scale then becomes a threshold, and if you're not above a certain number, then lenders either won't give you credit or they'll charge you a lot more. A much higher interest rate for that credit. So that can be costly on a mortgage. A difference between a 700 and a 500 credit score could be tens of thousands of dollars in interest that you would pay over the life of that loan. So it can have a pretty profound impact on people's ability to get credit and their affordability of credit.
And Sarah, what is the latest research on how the credit scoring system negatively affects people of color and people with low incomes?
So we know that people of color, women, parents with young children are disproportionately likely to have lower incomes for a variety of systemic reasons. And when you have a lower income, you are also likely to have a lower credit score. And so that then has those cascading effects that Michael was just talking about. There are discussions, as Kelly alluded to in her comment, about whether there are ways we could count alternative sorts of payments to factor into people's credit scores. So there's been some discussion in the research and sort of policy stakeholder arenas about whether doing credit scoring differently could do less to disadvantage people who are more on the financial margins.
do you think it could? Do you think it could make a difference?
I think for some people it could, but what we saw from the moms who we were interviewing, sometimes they faced hard trade-offs between, say, making sure there was food on the table for their kids and the lights were on, and letting, you know, an internet bill go unpaid for a month, or letting a cell phone bill go unpaid for a month. So often with a really limited income or instability in income, those trade-offs come. And so even if we were to count, you know, some of the basic utility payments or rent payments, sometimes moms feel like they need to be late on those because there are things that are more important, like making sure their kids don't go to bed hungry that night. And so for those moms who are really in tough financial situations, those trade-offs they face would still end up negatively affecting their credit scores.
UW-Madison professors Sarah Halpern-Meekin and Michael Collins, new findings on how mothers with low incomes interact with the credit scoring system in America. And you can be part of the discussion along the way. Call in with a question, share your views at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Credit scores are key to accessing bank loans and financial mobility. And a pair of UW-Madison professors have new findings on how mothers with low incomes relate to the credit scoring system in America. Sarah Halpern-Meekin is a professor in the School of Human Ecology and La Follette School of Public Affairs. And Michael Collins, professor of Public Affairs and Human Ecology. Call in with a question, share your views, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Jeff in Appleton. Jeff, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, just been listening briefly. I'm not sure where artificially inflated credit score really helps. A credit score just gives access to more debt. If debt hasn't been managed, more debt is not the answer. I would love to find an answer to the problem. And I'd love to see everyone succeed, but I don't see where more debt for people that haven't managed it well at this point is really an answer.
Jeff, thank you for that. Sarah, what do you make of that perspective?
It reminds me of some of the things we heard from some of the moms who said, you know, I'm worried about using credit or spending money I don't have. They talked about the kinds of financial lessons and values they wanted their kids to learn. And those were about not spending beyond your means. And as Jeff speaks to, sometimes using credit and doing the things that actually help you build credit, your credit score, and expand how much credit you can have access to, or things that involve taking on debt, which mothers were often wary about because they knew their incomes were low sometimes and sometimes unstable.
I wonder, Michael, did the mothers know how to obtain a credit report and find out their credit score from the reporting agencies? How accessible was the score?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think there's been a pretty big shift in the both the branding of credit scores and also access to credit scores over about the last 10 years. So we should be clear that the credit scores that lenders use are very particular. Those are proprietary scores that the lenders pay for, and we typically don't see as consumers unless, I mean, there is a provision in the law that allows you to see it if you're denied credit. But for most of us, we don't see the scores that lenders use. But we can see these so-called educational scores or the facsimile scores that are provided. Many banks provide them to their customers, many credit unions, credit card providers, and others. And then there are services where you can find your simulated credit score based on your credit bureau data. So they're much more accessible than they used to. And we found that most of the moms we talked to weren't necessarily, diligently tracking their scores and, getting access to their score on a regular basis, but they knew generally where they were at. And based on some other data we looked at, it turns out that for a lot of low-income people, like the moms in our study, they actually underestimate how good their score is. So,
Huh.
there's also some uncertainty about what people think their score is. And so as a result, they think that their credit's worse than it really is.
Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, Sarah, it also, you think about how much of a priority it is for them even to know their score when they're trying to do much bigger things like keep food on the table and the daily stresses of life with not being able to pay all your bills.
I think it really speaks to how fundamentally important credit scores are, that it is something that mothers are aware of. In our study, around nine out of 10 of the mothers had an awareness of around what their credit score was. And that really underlines how much people know that it can shape what their financial options are in the moment and as they look ahead to what they'd like to work toward financially for their families.
We're hearing from Austin and Madison, called in to say there's a company called RentTrack that would report positive rent payments to credit agencies. And Austin says that was how they were able to improve their credit score that way. Do you have insights there, Michael, on RentTrack?
Yeah, I think that's an example of some of these new new innovative services that are out there. And to the extent that there's, I mean, the struggle is that the landlords who are willing to do this may not be the landlords that rent to the very lowest income. But for people who pay on time, who have the option to sort of opt in and have the ability to have their positive rental payments reported, it can actually help them to start to build a credit record. So those services can be really valuable. But they're not universally available, and they're probably the least likely to be available for the really low-income moms that we talked to in this study.
Sarah, the Biden administration is proposing to omit medical debt from the credit scoring system. Would that step improve credit for people with low incomes?
I think it depends on what group of people we're talking about. Often, the people with some of the very lowest incomes have Medicaid, and so many of their health insurance bills are covered, especially children are likely to be covered by Medicaid when their families have very low incomes. So discounting medical debt is less likely to help them than those folks who are just a little bit above them, who, especially in states that have an expanded Medicaid access, because those folks are less likely to be insured and therefore more likely to have medical debts.
That makes sense. Sarah Halpern-Meakin there, Michael Collins, they're professors at UW-Madison as we discuss credit scores and authors of a recent study on the subject. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Want to ask both of you, how do you hope this research influences public policy to make credit scores and the financial system at large more equitable? Michael, you first.
Well, I think one of the unique things that I think this study does, and I really credit Sarah and Jill Hoyting and Melody Harvey, who are also co-authors on this, for leading the charge on this, is actually just listening to the voices of the consumers. So much policy is made based on big data surveys, what's put out from industry groups. And the voice of the consumer is often very lost in all that. And so I think one of the important things about this study is just that we did listen. We didn't come in talking to these women about our assumptions about how the credit scoring system works. We listened to what they said. And what we heard suggests that there's some things that can be made better about this system. But, this system is something that they're working with and they're working through. And so I think that's a particular perspective that I hope policymakers can take into account as they think about new regulations in this space.
When you listened to their stories, had any of the people you surveyed ever disputed something on their credit report, pushed back on it?
That wasn't something that came up often. So moms were typically trying to do what they can in their power to raise their credit scores, like Austin mentioned, using some of the new services or apps that say they can help you build your credit. Those were the sorts of things that the strategies moms focused on.
Those new technologies, those apps, Sarah, do they hold promise?
The moms, some of the moms felt that they did. I remember talking to one mom who was telling us that she had been using one of these apps to pay herself, which is how the app described it. You would sort of pay yourself each month, and that would help to boost your credit score. She had a child and needed to go on maternity leave, which was unpaid because we don't have paid leave in the United States. And she then couldn't keep paying herself. So she saw that kind of progress she had made through using this app fall away because she had had a child.
Where does this research take you next, especially with these mothers?
So we're following these moms over time and trying to learn about a whole lot of different things from them. Some of the things that we're working on right now are trying to understand how they anticipate and try to prepare for financial shocks that they might experience ahead, like losses of income or unexpected expenses, and trying to understand more about the kinds of ideas around financial comfort or financial stability that they are motivated to work toward. And so, as Michael mentioned, really just listening to the mothers and having their perspectives guide the kinds of questions we
Where
ask
you
and the
take it
answers.
next. Yes, Sarah Halpern-Meakin, Professor, School of Human Ecology in La Follette School of Public Affairs. J. Michael Collins, Professor of Public Affairs and Human Ecology at UW-Madison. Find a link to the study, wpr.org/mornings. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.